Welcome to Keep Calm and Cook On. I'm your host, Julia Tertian. Today, you're listening to one part of a special 9-part series recorded during my virtual book tour celebrating my latest cookbook, Simply Julia. In this series, I get to switch seats and be the person answering the questions rather than asking them. If you enjoyed these conversations, please know that there are over 50 more episodes of Keep Calm and Cook On you might also really love. There's a link to all of the episodes in the show notes, plus a link to order a personalized copy of Simply Julia from Oblong Books, my local indie bookstore. And please don't forget to rate and review the show. It takes very little time and it goes a very long way to sharing these conversations. And before we dive in, a special thanks to Better Than Bouillon, which has made this season and many of my meals possible. Better Than Bouillon is a paste, a base, a flavor enhancer. It's a kitchen shortcut, a secret seasoning. I use it so much that I actually shouted it out in Simply Julia on my list of 5 things I always have on hand. To add more flavor to your meals, head to betterthanbouillon.com or just click on the link in the show notes. Today's episode features the conversation I had with Nick Sharma on March 6th during a virtual event hosted by Now Serving, a cookbook and culinary shop in Los Angeles. Nick is a food writer, photographer, cookbook author, and recipe developer based in Los Angeles. He's the author of 2 best-selling cookbooks. His first, Season, Big Flavors, Beautiful Food, was a finalist for the James Beard Foundation Award for Photography. It was also a finalist for the International Association of Culinary Professionals Julia Child Award. Nick's second cookbook, The Flavor Equation, focuses on the science of flavor and how we interact with it. Nick and I spoke about how I came to define healthy, and we had an in-depth talk about the behind the scenes of making the photos in Simply Julia. We also talked about the difference between cooking intuitively and writing recipes. The voice you'll hear throughout the show, and especially at the end, belongs to Ken from Now Serving, who chimes in to ask questions from the audience. I hope you enjoy this conversation.
So I'm really excited to celebrate your newest book, and I love that it's just you. It feels so you. I mean, all your books have felt you, but this one feels so much more just Julia, who Julia is. I mean, all your books don't have any of the pretensions of, oh, you got to do this, you got to do that. And that's, I think, one of the things I really love about Simple Julia. And Melina Hammer was the photographer for this cookbook. And it's just so, it feels like we're living with you in this cookbook throughout the photos, you know, in your kitchen, you know, your family, Grace is in it too, your wife. And speaking of spouses, I have a little surprise for you. From Michael, who's my husband, and Michael made.
Oh my God!
This morning, he did.
Oh my God! This is so great.
And I'm the cook at home, right? So I was really proud of him this morning. He woke up early.
It looks perfect.
Okay, he's not. He's watching this somewhere. So yeah.
Well done, Michael. I'm very proud of you.
So delicious cake. We had some for breakfast this morning. Awesome. And I think everyone should go and make the marble pound cake, which has coconut in it and chocolate. It's it's just a beautiful aromatic combination. So,
which means a lot coming from you, because you are the master of beautiful aromatic combinations.
On a t-shirt. So today we're going to talk about your book. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions and then just, you know, be a casual discussion.
Sounds great.
That's how I love it. So yeah, and if you don't want to answer anything, just say, hell no, I'm not going to answer.
I trust you. I'm in good hands.
So my first question is, one of the things that you do in this book in the introduction, you focus on what is healthy food, what is comfort food. And that's a big theme throughout this book, making life easy, but also defining these two words. And to different people, both health and comfort just means so many different things, regardless of whether you're living in this country or in another country.
Totally.
And then I know from your previous book, Now and Again, I remember you talk about your wife, Grace, being diagnosed with diabetes and how that played a really huge role in that book. And it does even more so now. So what is your philosophy on healthy comfort foods?
Sure.
How has that evolved? Because a lot has changed also now.
Yeah.
And like, who is Simply Julia, which is what you're trying to tell us in this book. So
sure. Yeah,
talk about that.
Well, I will absolutely answer your very important question, which I'm really glad you asked, because I definitely want to talk about this and I'm curious to talk about it with you too. But first, I just want to say, I really appreciate everything you said about the book, and that means a lot. And, when I got my first copies, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, I sent one to my parents, and my mom called me and she was like, I feel like you're here, like as she was flipping through it. And I feel like what you just said, how you described it, reminds me of that moment. And in both your description and that moment with my mom, like, it just makes me feel really happy. And I'm so glad that comes through, because that is absolutely how I want this book to feel, whether it's with my mother or my friend or someone I don't know. Like, mm-hmm. I want you to feel like you've got a supportive person in the kitchen with you. So that just means a lot. So thank you. And yeah, the subtitle of the book is, you know, these are easy recipes for healthy comfort food. And I feel like I spend so much of the book, and I honestly spend so much of my life just trying to understand what those words mean. And mm-hmm. what I put forward, I guess, in the introduction in the book is that these words are for all of us to define for ourselves. And I just want to create a space where we can respect each other's definitions and hear each other's definitions. And I appreciate what you said, Nick, about, like, you know, it's different, you know, in so many places, like across the world too, which I feel like you always do such a good job of, like, reminding us of in a really wonderful way. And so instead of just telling you that everyone defines it differently, I'll tell you what I feel when I say these words, which is, for me, healthy and comfort have a lot to do with each other. And it's important for me to put them together. When I feel my healthiest, I feel my most comfortable. I feel my most confident. I feel the least stressed. I feel the least anxious. I feel very present. And most importantly, I feel, like, very deeply connected. And all of that, to me, falls under this idea of healthy, especially healthy comfort. And what I really wanted to do in this book, and what I'm so grateful I was able to do, is really push against a lot of what I had thought was healthy. And for so long, I really just quite simply understood healthy to just be a kind of, like, a more intellectual way, or I don't know, more kind of, like, indirect way of saying skinny. I thought they were the same, and they are not, just a fact. And, you know, I had confused them for so long. And I think a lot of books, especially cookbooks, use the word healthy as this way to indicate skinny and to indicate, like, the desired goal is to lose weight. And I am, like, really happy that I wrote a healthy cookbook that's not about weight loss. That feels really crucial to me. And it feels crucial to me on, like, a deeply personal level, because I did not always feel this way about the word healthy. And I've had, like, weight and body image issues, like, my whole life. And I've loved to cook my whole life. And that's something I've written about and spoken about. And I've written many cookbooks because I love to cook. And I've had this, like, positive, pleasurable, like, happy, curious relationship with cooking, but I haven't always felt that way about eating. And I feel like I've felt in my career being a cookbook author a little, like, I don't know, sort of, that's been hard for me to reconcile. And it's made me feel, honestly, at times, like, almost, like, fraudulent. Like, I'm selling you all this happy stuff about food, but I'm actually not experiencing it. And I've worked through a lot of that through various things, like a ton of therapy, with different types of therapists, which I'd be happy to share more if anyone wants to know, through many conversations, many, many conversations, or just the same long conversation with my wife. I've changed these conversations with my friends and family. I've, like, set up more boundaries within those conversations. I've changed who I talk to, and mostly, like, who I listen to and, like, who I turn to. So, like, I've, you know, added people to my social media feed who show me, like, what it looks like to not hate the word fat and to, you know, not put any disclaimers around it, because it doesn't need one or any, and, you know, and on and on. And I feel like I got to bring all this to this book in a way that I'm really happy that this conversation is coming alongside the recipes. So for me, when I feel healthy, I honestly just feel free. Like all of the stuff I'm talking about, like diet culture and body image stuff, like I felt like quite literally like weighed down for so long. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like quite liberated and like very invested in like body liberation for others. Like I would love to see more healthy cookbooks written by so many more authors, authors who do not look like me, authors who live in all sorts of different bodies. Like I think we all deserve to see our like ourselves represented in the word healthy. So that was a long answer to your question. But I'm really glad you brought it up. I'm just really happy you brought it up because this is all like super, super important to me. And I feel like it's why the recipes are also so easy and simple. And, you know, these are my simplest recipes I've ever written. And I've always written like pretty simple recipes. And I really put a lot of effort into making sure these ingredients are all like very available, very affordable, because that all falls under healthy to me. Like healthy isn't, it should not be a privilege, like by any means.
Right.
And it shouldn't be stressful, you know, like at all.
Right.
So anyway, I will leave it to your questions and I will get off the soapbox.
I think you definitely, what I really appreciate in this book is that, and all your books also, there's no judgment, and you also don't throw the reader into this quandary of questioning their current activities in a negative way. What I really appreciate, like, you know, once you start reading the head notes in the recipe, there are all these little personal stories about your grandmother and, you know, your friends and Grace and everyone, you know, and so it all builds in, but there is a connection. So it doesn't feel so sterile where you're saying this is healthy or this is clean. And I loathe the word clean. Clean eating.
Oh, I have
no idea
what
it means.
Hate and it. And I don't use the word hate. Like, I hate it.
And I try not to be judgmental, but I'm pretty honest about this. Like when I see it in a book or somewhere, it really makes me then wonder, is everybody else eating food that's unclean? Like,
that's
what are you trying to say?
Yeah.
So it puts you on the defensive.
Thank you for saying that. I could not agree more.
And, but I really appreciate you don't go down that path, and you're telling us this is healthy comfort food for me, my friends and my family and the people that I've spoken to. And you're providing people with the tools in this book, like you do the whole condiment section. You know, you've got the you've got like the sauces, and which we're going to get into some numerology questions in a bit.
Oh, I can't wait.
But I really appreciate the fact that you're giving people the tools to say, hey, this is what I keep on hand in my pantry at all times. You can go use this and, you know, have fun with it, but don't stress out. And like my husband was making the cake this morning, and he kept reading the one line where you say in the cake, don't get stressed out. This is not a test. And I, you know, he's saying that aloud. And I said, this is what we want as cookbook authors for our readers to take away at the end of the day.
Totally. I feel like you and I mean, I don't mean to speak for you and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you and I share this desire to just equip people with as much information in a way that's accessible. And because, we don't want people to feel stressed out. And like, and I feel like you're so good at doing it from like a much more scientific place. But I don't know, I was thinking about how excited I was to talk to you today. And I was thinking about in Flavor Equation, okay, I'm making this about both of our books. I hope that's okay. Like, where you break, where like you break down all the stuff about just, you know, cooking and science and all this stuff. But like the fact that, and I've spoken to you about this, it just really struck me that you included emotion in it. And I was so moved by that. And I was so glad to see you put that in that context. And because it's so important. And I feel like, yeah, that moment in the instructions and in the marble cake, you know, that Michael was following, that it says at one, because basically you, it's this, the reason it's a marbled cake is you make one batter and then you put half of it, you mix half of it with some melted chocolate, and then you get two batters for the price of one. And then you just like put it in your loaf pan. And it's like, I think it's like that moment where people are like, how many ounces should I put next to each other? And I'm like, just whatever.
Yeah. Like, no one's coming to grade you at home.
And I like put that instruction in, like, don't be stressed about it, because I think that's a moment where someone could get stressed. And I just think, to me, it's about the emotion. Like if you are stressed when you're cooking, like that's not an enjoyable experience. Therefore, I don't think it's a healthy one. Like I think healthy should be pleasurable, and
absolutely
stress is not healthy.
Yeah, and that's what I really liked in this book, is that throughout the book you're guiding people, like you're like the silent voice behind, like you're telling them, okay, don't freak out, I'm here for you. Speaking of voices and getting into superstitions, so I felt it was kind of like a numerology book, because when I opened it, I immediately looked at the table of contents and I saw 5, 11, 7, and then I was thinking, okay, that's not a Pythagorean triplet, like something's going on here. What's going on? I got to ask Julia this question, because I'm a little bit superstitious about things. I want to know, Julia, what you do.
Do you know about numerology?
A little bit, but not too much. Like, I watch a lot of those documentaries that I shouldn't be watching on TV.
I'm asking because I don't know anything. And so I'm wondering if you can tell me. So basically, I'm an anxious person, inherited it. Anxious on my own too. Wonderful. Just a lot of anxiety. And so including cooking, like of the many things that help me not feel anxious, one is like making lists of things and like having numbered lists of things. I write recipes, right? Like control in a world where I don't feel in control. So I include tons of lists. I've done it in all my books, and there's more than ever in this book. And I do it because it's the way like my mind organizes things. And I also very much, I mean, this might sound so silly, but it's like, I just wanted this book to feel like my like grocery lists, my handwriting is all over the book. Like, you know, there's list of things. Like, I just wanted it to feel like, I mean, I don't know if you can see, but I'm sitting like in front of my desk. Like, I have a million notes and my life is, Nick is like, wait, hold on.
We can see that.
I'm sure there's like my passwords for everything.
Okay, why don't we need to do a Zoom or FaceTime call one-on-one where I like look at the house? What's happening, Julia?
We can all watch like my Netflix account. So I just surround myself with like notes and handwriting and lists of things. So again, like I wanted the book to kind of feel like me. I wanted it to feel like it's coming from my kitchen to yours. And I want it to feel like me, not because I think I'm like more special than anyone else, but because I think when we are just selves, when we bring our full selves to our work, the way you do in your work, like, I think it feels different. Like when you consume it, you know, it's like the emotion when you're eating, like when you're consuming a cookbook, like, I think if you really have a sense of who it's coming from and you feel like you can trust this person because they've been honest with you, like, it's a different experience. So I just tried to establish that from the beginning in this book, including like sharing a lot of just very personal stuff. Again, not because I, you know, not from like this ego place. I mean, maybe, I don't know. But like, I do that because I just want, especially because this book does talk so much about things like body image and stuff that's like, at least for me, has historically been really hard to talk about. Like, I want you to, when you open the book, like, you just know, like, you are in a safe place. You are in a place where, like, you will not be judged for what you look like, what you weigh, like, what you eat, what you cook. Like, so I thought if I share some of myself in that, like, maybe that can help establish that feeling of just, like, safety.
Yeah.
I feel like you were asking me about numbers, and I just went somewhere totally different.
I think for a cookbook authors that I think a lot of people don't realize is that there's just like so many moving parts behind the book, and then kind of just having stability in terms of, you know, spreadsheets or numbers or whatever, you know, lists, it really helps get everything come together. So we've both done book talks before where we were living in a different world and now things have changed. So you were actually working on this book while the pandemic was taking off. And how, so a lot has changed since over this past year now. And we're doing a virtual book tour right now. And in comparison to working on your previous two books, Now and Then, and it's actually right behind me. They're like right down there. So how has this, working on this book, been different in comparison to those two?
Sure. It's been in some ways not so different, because I think the publishing industry versus many other businesses, you know, restaurants. I'm thinking of primarily, like, right now in this context, like, publishing isn't as affected. I don't really know why publishing houses have these big fancy offices. Like, everyone can do all of this from home. Like, I think it's like wasted money. I'm like, put that in people's advances, like, stop paying rent. So that's just no one's asking me, but that's what I think about that. So yeah, in some ways, not so different, as you know, but maybe everyone listening might not know, like, you know, there's not that many times where you need to be in person mm-hmm. with anyone in the cookbook making process. Not that it doesn't take other people, but a lot of right. that work can happen separately. It's nice to be together, but it's not required. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it was pretty much the same, but what was mostly very different were all the photographs for the book and promoting it, which is a big part of making a cookbook. So in terms of the photograph, basically this book started 2 years ago. It started, you know, about a year before the pandemic. That's when I was like sending around a proposal and all that. And then I spent like a year or so, you know, like working on it. And I turned in the first draft of the manuscript, which for anyone listening who doesn't know what that refers to specifically with a cookbook, it means all the words. So it's all the recipes. They had been all tested multiple times by multiple people, and all the words around the recipes, the introductions, all these endless list of things. So all the words were turned in, and I turned that in February 2020. And I was planning the photo shoot, which was going to be March 2020. And I was going to do it like I've done my other books. I was going to do it at home in my kitchen. I was going to have a group of people, some staying in my home, some staying nearby. Like, we were going to have camp cookbook for like a week, people coming from different places. And it was going to be like mid-March 2020. And so very quickly that just went out the window, you know, not safe, and not essential and not important. And like, let's just put this on the shelf and I'll revisit it whenever we understand what's happening. And then I remembered you brought up, and I'm so glad you did, Melina Hammer, who's, do you guys know each other? Are you?
No, I mean, I know who she is. But
okay. I was never friends, just sort of like similar, like the way I think of you, Nick, of someone who can like make great recipes, write great stuff about it and take beautiful photographs. Like who are you, Nick Sharma, unicorn you, like, that's so unusual. So Melina, I put in the same category because she, super talented photographer, super talented food stylist, super talented prop stylist, like very hard to find all three of those things in one person. Mm-hmm. And just like a very thoughtful, creative person. And she lives like 10 minutes from me, which is really unusual because okay. we do not live in a place like Los Angeles where lots of people live, let alone people who specialize in this funny world of cookbooks. And we live in a pretty like rural, random kind of area, a few hours outside of New York City. And I was like, wait, Melina Hammer lives in my same town. We had never met prior to then. She had moved, whatever, that's not important. So I called her and I was like, I don't know what you're doing now or what your bandwidth is, but I feel like we could probably figure this out. Like, what do you think? And she was like, let's give it a shot. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And we basically figured out the system that worked, but it was unlike any photo process I've ever done, which was, so we took a month to do it, which for me is kind of okay. long. I've usually shot my books in like a week, and we did it over a month because we only did a couple pictures every day. And it was just the two of us, no other people. You know, we both have incredibly supportive spouses, and that was a big part of it, but just us. And we were never in the same room together.
Okay.
I would prepare stuff at home. Also, I never went into a grocery store, like curbside, planning yeah. ahead, online ordering, all this. So I would make all the stuff at home and I would plan every photo and I would like pull reference photos and I would make all these lists of things. And I would every morning pack up a box with all the prep stuff with like masking tape labels and this goes with that. And I would drop it off on her doorstep and she would take it inside and she would put the finishing touches on everything. And we would text all day, like, do you want the, I don't know, you know, the navy napkin or the light blue napkin and stuff okay. like that. And that's how we did it, which was wow. pretty unbelievable. It required me to be like incredibly decisive and direct, which I think is always like a helpful thing. So that changed things. And I also, you know, I got to edit the book as the pandemic went on, which didn't change any recipes really, but it allowed me to revisit a lot of just stuff in the book with like a different perspective. And I think a perspective that, you know, I feel like it's not like I didn't appreciate food before, like it's been my whole life. It's not like I didn't appreciate the people who grow our food and stock our grocery shelves and all this stuff, but just my appreciation for all of this has just grown. So I feel like I got to weave a lot of that in, which I'm really grateful for. And the promotion is different. But honestly, we were talking about this in the like 2 minutes before we went on. I don't know. I think this is great. I think doing it virtually is wonderful. I think so many more people can be with us, and, you know, book tours favor big cities. And as someone who no longer lives in a big city, like, I appreciate that. Like, so I just think it's made all of this more accessible, which is kind of what my goal is just in everything I do. Like, how can I make this more accessible? So this feels really nice. And it's also, you know, it's nice to be with my wife and our dogs and sleep in my own bed and all that. But yeah, I was saying to Ken and Nick, the only thing I really, you know, it'd be so nice to see everyone and, you know, get to talk to people about their love of cooking or books, because these are things I love talking about. But, you know, I'm just sad that like we can't go to lunch after we have this conversation, but I'm glad we can all be safe and all that. So yeah, those are the things that I think are different. And yeah.
Yeah, the photography thing really threw me off, because I do it all by myself and I've never had to think about
it. I mean,
that.
You like, yeah. I feel like when I tell people the story of how I made the photographs, it seems like so unusual that it was just the two of us. And Nick is like, oh, that's one too many.
Be in control. I guess my next book will be Nick in Control. Actually, there was a recipe in your book that immediately caught my eye. And I thought it is the most beautiful thing. Everything's very beautiful, but that particular photo and the way it's done. I think after Michael cooking the cake, I'll be making this. And it's the pie in your book. And I thought that was such a beautiful, I'm pulling up the photo. And it's so beautiful because it's so, I'm one of those people, and I'm going to be really honest about this. I will make a pie if I have 3 days of nothing to do. Because you have to keep the pastry cold, roll it out, put it back in the fridge. And I just like this, just life has just got too much going on.
Yes.
And so even when I write pie recipes for books, it's always the easiest possible thing that can come to my mind. And then also the whole fuss about making things beautiful. So I only do that once or twice a year, Thanksgiving and maybe Christmas. But you have this beautiful pattern, which is so, and I'm trying to pull it up.
I'm going to pull up on my phone because this has a good story about photography.
I'm enamored with it. Like I opened and I'm like an idiot. I can't find it.
I think it's, I should know what page it's on, right? I can't remember. It's in the second chapter.
It's the kale, the kale pie.
Kale and mushroom pot pie. It's in chapter 2. I don't know what page it is off the top of my head.
I've actually bookmarked it and I'm not even looking at the bookmark. I think it is so smart and intelligent and simplistic, but yet glamorous when you look at it.
Just like me.
I mean, I think you're glamorous, but I mean, every time I look at it and then I look at like the shapes and it's like, why has no one ever done this? Maybe someone has, I've just never seen it, but I thought this was so fun. And like, you know, even if you have a kid at home who's, you know, you want to get your kids involved in cooking, you can prepare the base of this and then just have your kid put it together. And I thought this was such a fun, easy thing to do.
Yeah, I'm so glad. I'm so glad you brought up this recipe because it is totally one of my favorites for like all the reasons Nick just so generously described. And it's this kale and mushroom pot pie. It's a vegetarian pot pie that is totally like as satisfying as like a chicken pot pie. And basically you roast a sheet pan of like mushrooms and onions, which I do because you're going to turn on the oven anyway to do the pie. And then you can cook all your mushrooms and onions at the same time. You don't have to do like batches in a skillet. and they just, it's, you don't have to watch them or be there. Like, I'm just want everything to be easy and taste really good. So that happens. And then you chop up some kale and carrots and you just blanch them quickly in some hot water. You could probably roast them too. I don't know why I didn't think about that, but whatever. Anyway. And then you take an entire wheel of Boursin cheese, which is that delicious, like garlic herb goat cheese that is available at like every grocery store. I thought it was like the fanciest thing when I was growing up. And I was like, ooh, I don't even know if I'm saying it right now, but like, you know, fancy French thing, goat cheese, whatever, but it's like very, it's like, as far as cheese goes, it's like pretty cheap and it's just really creamy and delicious. So you put that in a bowl with a little bit of sour cream because I put it in everything. It's like in every recipe. I just like love it. But you do that instead of making like a bechamel or a gravy or, you know, it's just like two like dairy ingredients that you don't have to do any work. You whisk them, you put in all those, the roasted vegetables, the blanched vegetables, and then you put it like, I used a skillet because that's what I have, but you could use whatever, a baking dish or whatever, something that won't melt in the oven. And then you take a piece of frozen puff pastry because like Nick said, like life is too short. And I basically, you know, because this isn't my first cookbook, I have gotten to just talk to so many people, you know, at events like this and stuff when they were in person, just like about like what makes someone, you know, it's one thing to pull someone into a recipe, like, hey, this sounds good. But then like you see the steps and stuff and it's like, it's so easy for anyone to turn the page at any point. So I'm always curious about like what makes someone turn the page and skip it. And usually it's things like making homemade dough or crimping the edges. Like, what does that mean? Like, so I was thinking about this in this recipe and I was like, I just want the little bit of crispy puff pastry and it doesn't have to be a big ordeal. But then I had the skillet, which is round, and puff pastry comes in like a square or a rectangle. And then I was like, so how do I explain how to cut this? And then I was like, let's just make it easy. Like cut it into a bunch of triangles and then you just like shingle them on top. And it's kind of, it's fun, like you said. And to me, fun is like a huge part of healthy comfort. Like it should be fun. Like we can have fun with our food. And it's just easy. And I brush a little egg, bake it. And then you get this like beautiful thing that was actually easier to make. Like it's more beautiful and it's simpler and it's easier. Like to me, that checks all the boxes. And I'm just going to show you, cause we're talking about the photo shoot and the fact that Melina and I weren't together. So writing instructions for something like this, like cutting the puff pastry into the triangles, shingling them on, like, I think it makes it sound harder than it actually is to do. And that's why, as Nick showed you and he held up the book, that's why this recipe, I was like, I want to have some process photos for this so you can see how it's done. Because if you just read everything I said, it might be like, wait, what am I supposed to do? So, but because those process photos didn't exist until we took them, I had to explain this to Melina, right? So I sent her a picture. I took a piece of computer paper. I cut it with scissors, but you know, I put my knife there.
It looks exactly like that.
Yeah. I was like, this is what I want the photo to look like.
Just a quick note to say there's a link in the show notes to an Instagram post I did sharing the behind the scenes of this photo if you'd like to see it.
Oh, it looks
but me being me and I like hate wasting food, I was like, no, I'm not going to do this with a piece of puff pastry. I will do it with a piece of paper. So
I love it.
That's the behind the scenes.
It's like pie origami 101.
Yeah, totally. Well, there's, what is her name? Lauren Co.
The
pie. What's her book name? Is her book
Pyometry?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like she knows how to actually do all of this. And I'm like, I'm just like in my open grass class.
Oh, this is very beautiful. So the next couple of questions are going to be about the woman in the book. And so you talk about singing and cooking by intuition in your book. And there's the whole like two-page thing about it. And I messaged Michael the other day when I was going through your book and I was preparing for this talk. And I said, you know, Julia sings for Grace and Grace like will ask Julia to sing, but you never asked me to sing at home. In fact, you tell me to stop singing. And he said, that's because you don't even have to ask you to sing. You just bellow because I'm not a good singer. But I love singing. I'm just a terrible singer. And so I thought that was such a sweet thing, but you also then bring in intuition in cooking, which is such an important tool for a cook to develop at home. because then you don't need all the fancy gadgets. You can rely on your senses, and that comes by experience, of course. But you talk a lot about that, how also it kind of prevents anxiety in a way and stress when cooking. Do you want to like talk a little bit about that?
Sure. And then we can break into the song we prepared. No, I'm just kidding. We didn't do that.
And a dance moves.
So a little, the backstory you need to know for this story are two things. One is that I love writing recipes. That's why I've done it for so long. I love the process. I love explaining things and figuring it out and providing all that information. When I am not writing recipes, I am never following them. I never cook from other cookbooks. I read them. Sometimes I will bake from recipes. I've baked some of Nick's recipes. I truly have. I'm not just saying that. But I always cook very intuitively. And, you know, I'm very like, open the fridge, see what's there, put something together, which to me feels very effortless. And I know the idea of that stresses like a lot of people out. And just the idea of like trusting your instincts, like what if you don't have them, like all that. So I feel like I've always had this, just like intuitive feeling in the kitchen that I haven't always known how to explain to other people how to get that. So I've provided recipes because I think if you make them enough, maybe you'll get there. But I've always just felt the tension between these two things, like writing recipes, but not using them. And I haven't known how to explain this tension. So at the same time, I've always like, I'll like talk to a doorknob. Like I can talk to anyone. Like I'm not nervous about talking to people, and I can talk in front of a large group of people, but I do not know how to raise my voice. Like I love doing this on Zoom because I can have my headphone thing and there's not a big group of, if we were in person and, you know, all 38 of you on this and stuff, like we're here, like the people in the back wouldn't be able to hear me and I'd be sweating and stressed out because that was happening. Not because I'm nervous to speak in front of you. I'm just not loud. So I have like talked about this in therapy and with my wife, like, am I scared of my own voice? Or I don't know, like whatever. And I decided to go to a singing workshop to like basically just like face my fear. And I thought this would be good. So I went for a weekend. It was like at this weird yoga retreat place in Massachusetts. And I was with a group of like 20 women. It was all women. And I was the youngest person there by like a lot. And it was just, it was like the funniest and most fun and also scariest like weekend. And the way it worked was we had an instructor, Roberta, and Roberta would sing a song and then we would all sing it back to her. And it was like call and response. And we did this for like an entire weekend, like many, many, many hours. And it was like amazing. And I'm like singing my little heart out and it's so great. And then I get home, I drive home, I come in the door and Grace is like, how was it? Your singing workshop, you faced your fear. And I was like, it was amazing. And then Grace said, okay, so sing me a song. And I said, okay. And then I stopped and I said, I can't remember any songs. And she was like, you just came in the door. Like it hasn't been 24 hours. It hasn't been an hour. Like you just got home, like sing a song. And I was like, nope, I can't remember one. And she was like, are you shy? Like it's me. And I was like, no, I'm not shy anymore. I'm over that. I just cannot remember a single song. And it was like a light bulb went off. And I was like, this is why I write recipes, because when I'm cooking and I'm just intuitive and in the moment, I am totally present. And when I'm present, I'm not anxious. When I'm anxious, I'm thinking about like something that happened or something that's going to happen, right? Worry is going to happen.
Right.
So when I'm present, it's like when I'm my most calm and I am able to access that in the kitchen all the time. That's why I want to give people the skills to cook at home, because it can just be this relaxed experience. And then I realized I was feeling that when I was singing too, because I didn't know the song. So I had to be very present so I could listen. You know, I couldn't do something else at the same time. But because I had this moment with the teacher over and over, I realized it was really powerful to me that I couldn't remember any songs. And I kept thinking, oh, it's because I was so present. I wasn't like planning ahead. And I thought, oh, this is what happens with so many people with cooking. Like you can, I can sit with you in your kitchen, Nick, you can show me one of your favorite things to cook, which I would like love to do, I can be like completely present for that. Like I will not be on my phone. Like I will be paying attention. I can taste what you're doing.
Right.
You can tell me every step. And then, you know, I can go home and that day or like a few weeks later, let alone like a year later, I might not remember how to make that thing. And that's why we write recipes so that we can, you know, if I had a sheet of lyrics, I could probably remember the song. Like I could probably like bring it back. And it just, it made it all just like make so much sense to me. And it gave me like this added just clarity, I think, about my work. Like this is why it's worth writing this stuff down and not just talking about like the skills and stuff, like actually giving you the lyrics. So like you can remember it and you can also make it yours, right? Like it's a jumping off point. So yeah, I don't remember any songs.
I can always remember them. Just no one wants to listen to me.
Cooking doesn't have to be complicated to be good. Better Than Bouillon makes it easy to make any meal even better. Call it a base, call it a paste, call it a flavor enhancer. No matter what you're making, you'll make it better by stirring in a spoonful of one of the many flavors of their extensive product range. Better Than Bouillon is made with real ingredients. Meat, seafood, vegetables, seasonings. There are options that are perfect for vegetarians, vegans, and those who follow an organic or reduced sodium diet. Better Than Bouillon can be found in the soup aisles of major grocery retailers or conveniently can be purchased online. For more information, visit betterthanbouillon.com or click on the link in the show notes.
So my next question, which is also about the woman in your life, Georgine, who I know has been, was such a big part of, you know, the work that you and Grace were doing. And then your grandmother, Beatrice, whose recipe is via your mom, your mom, it comes into this book. Do you want to talk a little bit about them? How this is so different in the way they've influenced your work.
Yeah. Thank you so much for bringing them both up. These are both women who are no longer alive, who remain very, very important to me. So Georgine was a very good friend of me and my wife, Grace's. Was that a sentence? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we met Georgine like a couple years before she passed away. And we met her because we happened to just have the incredibly fortunate timing of walking into the church kitchen where she had volunteered weekly for many years. We happened to walk in at the same time as her shift. And that's how we joined the same shift that she had been volunteering at this place called Angel Food East, where Grace and I have continued to volunteer weekly. And we've done it for years now. And it is basically like a local small equivalent of Meals on Wheels. Like we serve like 70 clients, and when I say our shift, you know, it's us in the kitchen and we make this homemade meal and pack it up individually and seal it. And then other volunteers come and they deliver the meals, and all the meals go to homebound clients. So whether illness or ability or age or whatever issue. And it started like over 25 years ago, like during the AIDS pandemic. So that's what it is. And she had been doing it for so long. And actually our work at Angel Food East has inspired so many recipes in this book because it's just been such a big part of my life for the last few years. And, you know, I bring my life to my work, but also the food we make there is totally like the definition of healthy comfort food. Like we're cooking for people who, so many of them are in really intense medications and don't have an appetite. So we want to make it like really appealing. We want to make it comforting, like not have anyone feel like challenged in any way when they're eating, just like purely taken care of. And we also want to make sure those meals are full of things like fresh vegetables and stuff like that. So it's so much of like the food that's in the book, and some of it quite literally are recipes that we've cooked there or friends of ours have cooked that I've gotten to include. And by far the best part of Angel Food East for us was meeting Georgine and spending some time with her every week in the last few years of her life. And, you know, those years will forever impact our years. And I think so much about the fact that like we really just became friends with her. You know, she was in her 90s when she passed away. Like, we had such a generational difference, but we were able to forge this friendship. And I think so much of it has to do with the fact that we cooked together. Mm-hmm. You know, we had this set thing every week, and also we were occupied. We were doing something. You know, it wasn't like just sitting with her in her living room, which we also did eventually, but like,
sure,
we got to know each other over an activity. And I think that just speaks to me. It reminds me of like, food can do so many things and provide so many things. And one thing it can do is provide this sort of like structured time where you can engage in like really meaningful conversation and like really get to know each other. Cause I think when we're occupied, we like share more. You know, that can often happen over eating.
Right.
So Georgine was just such a dear friend and a wonderful presence in our lives and such a character. She was like the funniest person I ever met. And, you know, I dedicated this book that's in her memory and her cat Turk, who passed away around mm-hmm. the same time. And we like to picture them together because she loved animals. And so that was Georgine. And so she obviously brings up a lot of emotions for me, which are part of food, and right. so many memories attached to food. And there's this wonderful like coffee cake recipe in the book that's like based on hers because she made great coffee cakes. She, her joke was, she liked to say baking was her Valium, and I will say it's not a substitute, like please take the medication like if you are prescribed it. But you know, that's the kind of thing she would say all the time. She was just full of one-liners. She was just such a, I feel like, what a gift we got to have her in our life. And my grandmother, Beatrice, my mother's mother, I never met my maternal grandparents. They died long before I was born, but I feel an incredible tether to them when I'm in my kitchen because they ran a bakery in Brooklyn where my mom and her aunt and my aunts, my mom's sisters, grew up in the bakery. And the bakery just like looms very large in our family. It's no longer around. And, you know, my mom, is first generation in this country. Like her mm-hmm. parents fled Eastern Europe during the pogroms. And I think, you know, my mom's in her, she's 76, which I think she would be fine with me sharing. She's like very cool 76, not that 76 isn't cool. I don't know. I like, don't mean to be ageist. What I'm trying to say is my mom is like of, I think, a generation of women who worked really hard to get out of the kitchen, to get out of the family business. And right. here I am spending my life going in the back. Kitchen, right? But it's like on my own terms. Right. But my grandmother, even though I didn't meet her, just is a really important person in my life. And the fact that I got to write about both of them in the book, I got to put pictures of them in the book. It's another reminder to me about why cookbooks are so important. Like they hold our legacies, our stories. Yeah. You know, it's why a store like Now Serving is so important. Like the shelves behind Ken are just like, they're holding culture and people, you know, like food is people. And it's why, you know, I feel so lucky to put my full self in my work and to have that opportunity. And it's why alongside of that, I'm really invested in and dedicated to like whatever I can do to make that possible for as many people, because I know what it feels like to put my story in a book, have it packaged mm-hmm. and promoted and supported and heard. Like that is an experience that shouldn't be a limited experience.
Right.
Yeah.
Beautiful. So a lot has changed. Like we've spoken about the landscape of entertaining. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're doing like these Zoom dinners with friends and family sometimes. Mm-hmm. And in the book, you do have a lot of tips and tricks and even tools on what make life easy. One of the things I really loved, and I thought this is so cute, and I think I'm going to do it at home, is use your silverware on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. It's something just so simple,
yeah,
but it just adds a little special factor into the meal. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the things do you think, like now with this new landscape that we're all living in, depending on whenever we get out of it, what are some of the fun things we can do at home with when it comes to entertaining?
Yeah, it's such a great question. And I'll just share some things I've been doing. And if anyone has more ideas, like put them in the chat because like we could all use them.
Yeah.
So I have a 5-year-old niece who lives far away from where I live. My brother and his family are in Cleveland, Ohio. And so it's been like a year since, or little more than that, since I've seen her in person. So she's, you know, a year out of a five-year-old's life is like a big proportion of it. And one way that I feel like I've been able to stay very connected to her and to my brother and my sister-in-law is we've done a lot of cooking together over Zoom. And I will send them like a recipe, or just like, I'll be like, what do you want to learn to make? And we'll figure it out together. And we've been cooking together. And I don't know about all of you, but I know when I get on Zoom with my family, which we've been doing weekly, which is amazing, but sometimes I do not know what to talk about, and no one does, because nothing has changed. And how lucky are we that nothing has changed? Like, I'm just at home watching Bravo. Like, I can tell you about Below Deck if you want. I don't have that much to report. Like, my book came out, that's exciting. But like, otherwise my life has been like so luckily boring. And so having like an activity, having something to do, has been really great. And for me, cooking is the easiest thing. And something I love to do and love to share. And it has just been really nice to not just like sit here and, you know, be sad, and to just do something mm-hmm. together. So that's been really, really nice. And I definitely recommend that. And I also, you know, in the back of the book, Nick brought up my numbered list of things. So there's one of my seven lists, which is like a whole category of the book. There are seven lists. That's what it is. And each list has seven things on it. And they range from like practical cooking things, like what to do with leftover buttermilk, because I feel like everyone buys it to use like a cup in like a pancake recipe. And then it's like, what do I do with the rest? Because it comes in a quart, like not a cup. So that's why that's there. But like one of the other lists are seven just like really kind of like fun and meaningful questions that you can ask to just prompt like meaningful dinner time conversation. And all those questions are ones we can ask each other over Zoom and, mm-hmm. you know, or questions like that, like having that kind of just prompt, I think is really helpful. So those are some of the things that I've been doing that have just helped me feel more closely connected to my family, my friends, when we just can't be together in person.
Below Deck, huh, Julia? That's what I've taken away from this, Below Deck.
It's true.
So that's
I said
one,
I'd
one
be honest.
I love it. So my final question for you is, and I think this is probably what summarizes this book, is what do you want people to take away from Simply Julia at the end of the day after they, you know, read it, cook from it? What is it that you want them to?
I think, if I may say two things, I would like for them to take away that, you know, as we're just talking about, the world is plenty stressful and challenging and asks a lot of us. So when we're cooking at home, like that should not be a source of stress or challenge. Like, I hope people take away, like, making just really good, solid, simple food is something we can do whenever we want, whether it's daily as I do, or, you know, less frequently, whatever you want, like it's there and you can do it. I've got your back. Like, I want people to take that away. And I think, like, I don't know, I feel like I just want to make bumper stickers that say like healthy and skinny are not the same thing. Like, I just feel mm-hmm. like that's really a message I wish I had really wrapped my head around earlier. So those would be the two, I would say. Yeah.
Two very important messages, two very important messages. So everyone, go get the book.
Thank you so
much, Julia.
Christina Gill is here.
Christina Gill is here.
Hi, Christina.
I've been not looking at the chat because I just want to be present as we're talking about. And I've been like, just, I don't mean to ignore anything. I like it stressed out easily, but I just saw Christina's name pop up and it's so good. Thank you, Christina. Hey.
There was a couple of questions. This is from Karen and she's asking, she says list. Yes. Recipe cards or Word documents, preference or both?
I don't know if I understand. Do I have a preference between
recipe cards or Word documents?
Just in general?
As far as making your list, What do you make your lists on?
Got it. Sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't understand. I make my list on basically like backs of envelopes of bills and like post-its. And I purchase so many beautiful notebooks. People get them for me as gifts because like, I feel like it's like, I'm a writer. Like, here's the thing. Or, you know, like we also get a lot of dog related things, Grace and I, because we love our dog. Like, it's like been something people give me and I just have a stack of them. I never use them and I want to be a writer who uses them, but I take pieces of computer paper all the time. Like computer paper and a Sharpie is everything in my life. So that's why the book looks what it looks like. Yeah.
Nicole Roundtree. Hi, Nicole. She's asking, I loved listening to your process with Melina. Mm. Have you been lucky enough to taste anything Melina has been working on for her book, please?
She's working on
spoilers. Yeah.
Oh.
Yes, Melina is working on her own book, which I've seen some images of. She shared some pictures with me. I have not tasted anything. So I am with you. I'm excited. Melina makes gorgeous food and she runs like this cool kind of B&B thing. And I think that's what the book is based on. And it's cool because it's all food that's very local to like literally right where I live. So I'm really excited for her book. But I haven't tasted anything and I can't wait to.
I can't wait for that. We have a question from Julie. Hi, Julie. Julie's asking, what advice would you give your younger self or now all young people, especially women, of what you have learned about cooking, about appreciating healthy, delicious food? How do we pass down a healthy relationship with food?
Such a wonderful question. I appreciate all these questions. I'm raising dogs, not children. So I don't, you know, that is a perspective I can only share as like an aunt and as a author, I guess, as someone who's written about this. And, you know, I had a friend tell me the other day, I had given her an early copy of the book and she gave it to her teenage daughter to just look at. And she said she found her daughter sitting not in the kitchen, but like in the living room, reading the book, like a novel, not like a cookbook. And she was like, which part are you reading? And she said she was reading the essay that's like about basically body image. And she sent me this message just saying like, she really appreciated that I included this here. And I just like started crying because I was like, I hadn't, like the people I have in mind when I'm writing my books, I'm like basically always thinking about my mother-in-law. Like she is my reader because she's someone who cooks at home all the time. She wants easy recipes. Like she wants fun recipes. So my barometer is always like, would my mother-in-law Elaine like this? Like, that's all I like think about. And I just had not thought about like a young person, especially a young woman, a teenager, a girl reading this book. And it so like moved me. And what I have taken just from that experience recently is I think the power of what happens when like adults, especially women, who are in the lives of younger people, especially girls, like are just very honest and what can happen in that moment. And I think also, I mean, I've spoken to my mom a lot about this. It's in the essay, like a lot of my stuff is my body image stuff is like totally inherited. And, you know, it's something my mom and I are both kind of figuring out. And, you know, I think about what it would have looked like to grow up in a house where my mom wasn't belittling her own body or image. And not even if she said good things, just if she said nothing, like if that just wasn't discussed, like, I just wonder what it would have been like. I obviously can't go backwards, but that's definitely something I like think about. And just for like a more practical resource, one of the things that has been most helpful to me in this ongoing journey, which is definitely ongoing. And I like, if I could add more to that essay today, I would. Like I've, you know, this is stuff I learn about all the time. I'm not like an authority on any of this. I'm just very willing to be very honest because I feel very supported. So one of the tools that's really helped me is the book Intuitive Eating. And it's an amazing book and they've done multiple editions. And I think they're coming out with a new one and it's written by two registered dietitians. And every time they do a new edition, it's a good reminder to me that like, we're all always learning and they like incorporate new stuff and new context into each one, like including like, I know this new edition is going to include more about like the origins of fat phobia and diet culture, which are like completely rooted in like racism and white supremacy and that wasn't in the first edition. So anyway, I just really recommend their books or their newest version of the book. And there's a chapter on like how to raise intuitive eaters, basically. And by intuitive eating, what I understand it to be is just like just being in touch with your body and what it wants and giving it what it wants and not judging any of that and just like living very like unjudged, relaxed lives with our bodies, whatever their size is. So there's a chapter in there on like raising young people. And I was going to skip the chapter because I was like, oh, I'm not a parent. Like, I don't have to read this. And then I read it and I realized it helped me think a lot about like, what would have this been like if this is how I was parented, which was just interesting. So I really recommend that book.
I would just like to add, so we've cooked a couple recipes already this week from the book. Michelle and I have both cooked while having a very demanding and precocious toddler. I feel really seen with this book because a couple of things I remember, I recall just flipping through it is you say you can believe and support home cooking, but you can also be tired of it, which I think for many of us who, you know, I'm just tired of washing dishes like for 4 hours a day. And then the other thing what was really important is you talk about and you bring it up, Nick brought it up with Georgine is, you know, evoking memories is one of the healthiest things food can do. And that really struck me. So
thank you for sharing that. It means a lot to me to hear. And I just, just on a lighter practical note, I am just so with you on the dishes part of it. And I really think that is the hardest part of home cooking and the part that never gets talked about. Like there's no pictures of sinks full of dishes and cookbooks. Like, I don't know if anyone wants to see it, but it's like, that's very real. And that is like a big emphasis in the book is like, I will do dishes. I don't hate it, but it's like, that's not where my passion is. Passion is for the cooking, but I know that this is part of it. So that's why so many recipes are like, use the nonstick skillet, not because you can like use less oil, but because it's so much easier to clean. Like, and to me, again, that is so much a part of healthy cooking. Like if you are put off by making something, cause it's complicated, it's gonna be hard to clean. Like that gets you away from cooking, which I just really feel like we can all do. But anyway, sorry, I'm going on. Thank you for bringing that up and everything you said.
Of course, really of course. Yeah. I'd love to remind everybody you can get Julia's latest, Simply Julia, at nowservingla.com. We have signed book plates. I want to thank our lovely moderator, Nick. You're on the other side of the virtual conversation now. You've done both. You're in like this special club that we have. Thank you, everybody. Please have a wonderful weekend. Stay well.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed it, please take a moment to rate and review the show. And once again, thank you to Better Than Bouillon, which consistently enhances my food, and this special season of Keep Calm and Cook On. One spoonful easily adds the perfect amount of flavor to any of your meals. For more information and to shop, head to betterthanbouillon.com or just click on the link in the show notes. Until next time, take care.